Welcome to Slug's bi-weekly Slug Soundwaves podcast. Here, in our print mag and on slugmag.com, enjoy our curated content that highlights the best of Utah's alternative and underrepresented music, arts, events, and community subcultures. If Slug has benefited you or someone you love, consider contributing to sustain our existence. Head to slugmag.com/donate to join our community of donors.
Slug Magazine's Brewstillery is a local beer and spirits festival, and it's been celebrating Utah's brewers and distillers since 2018. This all-ages event has something for everyone to enjoy, offering tastings of local beer and spirits, and also featuring local food trucks, artisans, and music. Don't miss Slug Mag's Brewstillery 2024 on Saturday, June 15th at ArtSpace City Center from 2 to 7 p.m. Tickets on sale now through 24tix.com. This episode contains talk of suicide and drug use. Listener discretion is advised.
Shh. Are you listening?
This is Slug Soundwaves.
Tiger Bike is a four-piece emo band who found its genesis after its members attended BYU-Idaho. Based now in Salt Lake, they've collected a large underground following with their seven releases since 2022. The band's latest EP released is called Three Sundays in a Week, which was followed by a B-side acoustic release and a collaboration EP with the groups Laughing Matter and Boy Sprout. In this episode, the group talks about the releases they love and the ones they hate. They discuss what being raw to them looks like and how they strive toward a sort of underground sound. Plus, they discuss their time in an LDS-centered college and how they think the places you make emo music are the places you hate.
We're a band called Tiger Bike. My name's Noah Shelton. I play guitar and do vocals.
My name's Ben Slight. I also play guitar and do vocals.
I'm Ivy Fraser. I play drums and do some of the recording and
everything.
Bunch of stuff.
I'm Nate Fuh. I play bass and trumpet.
Yeah.
I'd say it's in the vein of Midwest emo and fourth wave emo revival. So for someone who's never heard it before, that doesn't mean really anything.
Yeah, that's the conundrum.
Really pretty guitar with terrible vocals.
It could go fast pace. It could go really slow pace. It's all over the place.
Imagine like an indie rock song that's a little grungier and a little sadder and has more screams in it. A lot of open tunings. They have like pretty kind of twinkly guitar sounds with maybe some harsher, screamier, whinier vocals.
It's all sad.
Yeah, I think the imperfections of the music make it more emotive, emotionally driven. Some experimentation with, you know, different instruments and things. But yeah, it's definitely a unique sound that I think we're all very encapsulated by and inspired by. So we try to make our own.
And I think in that, a big part of our recorded aesthetic is that we track fast. Things are very like, I don't want to say first draft. That sounds negative.
Raw.
But yeah, raw. The first idea is usually the right one.
Yeah, we thrive on the imperfections, I would say. Yeah. I think it kind of is a staple in this genre of music, and we own it. This is interesting because when I was in high school, I was starting to get really deep into music, and my friend introduced me to a band called Tiger's Jaw, and it was just some acoustic track by them, and I remember hearing the lead singer's vocals, and it was unlike anything I've ever heard. It was like really raw, kind of off, out of key, but I was like so enthralled by it. I started to go down a rabbit hole of this genre of music where it's just like unique and really emotive, and it kind of brought me into this whole new world of what is referred to as, I guess, Midwest emo or the emo revival scene.
That's what attracted me to it as like a young kid wanting to write emo music and starting to listen to it is like listening to it and being like, oh, that's bad. But like, I don't have any music talent. I could do that. Like, you know, like you see, you listen to some whiny, weird vocals and someone's just hitting a guitar and that's a song that you like. And it's like, oh, shoot, I could do that. Might as well try it out.
Yeah, there's something about the, like, there's a emotional directness, trying to think how to put it in the least...
No frills.
...wooey of words. Yeah, no frills. There's, like, not... A lot of music, I feel like, is rooted in an interesting emotion, and then there's, like, these layers of arbitration, almost, where through production and through arrangement, you can kind of create layers between you and the listener. This is a musical corner of the world where there's none of that. Yeah, the statement is in the text right there.
It was Blink-182 for me, dude. That was the basis. My brother always had Blink CDs in there in his truck. And then I listened to it a ton. And then I forgot what Blink-182 was because he like went off to college. And then like freshman year of high school, I remember rediscovering I Miss You by Blink-182. And I was like, oh my God, everything I've been listening to is shit. This is it, dude. And then I started listening to that a lot. And like the early Cage the Elephant stuff. And then I got into like Modern Baseball, Sorority Noise, Front Bottoms. And then it just delved from there. Mom Jeans, Free Throw. And started going to shows as a kid.
As a really young kid, I was huge on like Foo Fighters and Blink, and then I guess the gateway drug into this style particularly would have been like the Drive Thru Records, The Starting Line, and bands like that. And then I was playing in a pop punk band when I very first moved here called Fountain View. A member of that got me really into the Hotelier, who were definitely a big specific influence for this style for me, in good ways and bad. I, like, can't listen to Home Like No Place Is There in certain states of mind.
Specifically in regards to this project, the band that really made me want to, like, start doing this was Morning Dew. They came out with that one EP, Gulp, by Morning Dew, right before we all moved. I was listening to it every day driving home from work, so the whole EP on repeat. And I was like, I want to make some shit that sounds like this. So I was starting to write some riffs. We all moved. I put it all off. Then over the summer did that one demo that wasn't that good. That was like, you know.
That's one of my favorites we've ever put
out. I wanted
to
do something really raw and shitty that nobody would... I didn't want it to be accessible. I wanted it to be bad. You had to be into it to like it, you know.
Cowboy Church.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, so you don't like it?
No, I don't.
I love it.
I was in a pretty bad place when I wrote all those songs. I was in like a weird dissociative state doing weird drugs and shit. Like
that's what makes good
and then
music.
I was like, I just gotta put something out. I gotta have music that exists or I'm not going to exist for some shit. I don't know. So I was like, I just got to put something into the world. And then...
Uh-huh. And then everyone else liked it enough to...
Yeah, and then people start doing were the like, thing with you. Hey, we gotta make something better than that. Let's get together again and do something that doesn't suck. And then we got the self-titled, which is good. It's good as fuck.
I mean, that's one way to put it.
I'm a big fan of Ween. I love the Ween discography. I love how the albums are all over the place. It's not like an influence per se, because that's like way too cool and good for me to do, but like...
No, but yeah, talk about eclectic.
Yeah, in theory, yeah I want to have a weird eclectic discography.
And you gotta be able to release music you don't like.
Yeah, you power through it.
Yeah, it's sort of not up to you.
Yeah.
You just gotta do it. That was the self-titled. That EP is funny because
it's really funny.
Me and Ben, this was before we like even all formed as a band.
Me just and, wanted to write some songs.
Yeah, me and Ben just, like, were holed up in his room for, like, 2 days and just accidentally wrote that whole EP. And we had old drum tracks that were already recorded that we just uploaded again and just re-recorded completely new songs.
Yeah, they had no drummer at all. They were building it around. When I first was talking about joining the band, I thought it was built around programmed drums. It's not even that. It's like whole songs worth of drum takes.
We had no expectations for it. We were just like, let's just write something really fucking twinkly and emo and cool. And it just, it turned out really cool. Like,
yeah, people really liked it.
Yeah, and
Noah still doesn't know half the lyrics to most of the songs.
No, there's one song that I don't know. I don't know how to play it, and I don't know any of the words.
Yeah.
No, because we did them all in like 3 days.
Yeah.
Mixed, mastered, recorded, 3 days.
Mm-hmm. Me, yeah. Noah, and Ben go way back.
Way back.
Way back.
Back up to Rexburg, Idaho. Going to school.
Well,
I was.
Nate and I were. Ivy was for a little bit.
Yeah, not for very long.
Ben just lived there.
Yeah, so I grew up in Logan, and then my dad went up to Rexburg to visit my aunt, and he was like, this place is awesome. So he moved us there, and so I was stuck there for like 11 years, and it was a shithole, and I hated it. But that's the places you make emo music is places you hate.
I mean, it was horrible, so we needed an outlet.
Mormon culture is very oppressive and bad, and sometimes you have to get that out.
We were all raised Mormon. Well, were you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We were all raised Mormon, and then we all made our way up there eventually, been obviously different. But then we all sort of slowly left the church individually. And then, to Ivy's point, it was just a shitty place to be, not being in the church, but being stuck up there and still needing to go into school and all that. So it was a big outlet. This isn't speaking for everybody also, but this was a big outlet, and then we all found each other. And
there was a comfort in having each other and being able to play this type of music in an environment that didn't really match our values and our, you know, virtues and our interests and things like that. Granted, I think the reason why I didn't hate Rexburg is because I had that outlet and I was able to take advantage of it and do a lot with it. Honestly, more musically than I probably ever would have done if I didn't live there. I don't know.
I feel like we picked Three Sundays because it was kind of not the first song that we all wrote together, but kind of the one that really like came together for us the easiest, I feel like. You know, I just came in with that riff, and then we just all, it clicked so easy. Like, it just really came together, so I feel like it's a good representation of our sound and the way that we all work together. Yeah, that was actually a pretty hard time for me. So I had two pretty close friends that I'd done music with pretty early on in my music career, and I lost both of them to suicide within about a month of each other, and I feel like a lot of Three Sundays influences me coping with, losing people that are, close to you, and I wouldn't be doing what I was doing if I hadn't done music with them, and even people outside of music I knew. I've got a good amount of friends that, haven't made it through the dumb shit we were doing. And so I feel like that song specifically is kind of like a tribute, and also at the same time, like, why the fuck am I so lucky that I made it out when I've got this whole plethora of people I cared about that didn't, It's kind of me processing. It was a pretty intense wall of emotion at that time. It's very direct in the lyrics. It's no frills. It's very almost literal. It's specifically, the lyrics are about this one night I remember that, my friends and I had all been, we'd been drinking a whole bunch. We'd done a bunch of prescription pills and just all sorts of stuff. And I'd driven home and I was locked out of my house and I was just laying on my parents' trampoline and the sprinklers came on. And I'm just laying there at 3 a.m, just fucked up out of my mind. And I was pretty sure I wasn't going to wake up. And I was like, I'm just going to take this in. I'm going to really enjoy this because I don't think that I'm going to have another day. And I had a really upsetting amount of days like that at that time in my life. And so that's kind of just me processing why I was doing those things, why I thought that's something that was going to help me through the things I was trying to process. Specifically in probably the second verse, I have a line where it goes, I feel the cold ground on my skin. I wish that I was someone that I could love. And that's broken up over a little bit. But a lot of it, why I was doing those things, was because I wasn't happy with myself and who I was. And, you know, just desperately wishing that I could be someone that I, you know, that I could love myself. That was a hard thing for me to learn to have to do, you know.
Well, we love you.
That's our only deep song. The other ones are, like, I think you should leave quotes. And like, it's a deeply unserious project at its roots. I don't want it to be, like, a super emotional, sad thing. But it is a way for us to process, you know, hard things that we've all been through. Whether that's through silly things or serious things. Just kind of, you know. You're about to hear our single Three Sundays in a Week in its entirety. My eyes rolling out of my head is hollow. Bones are breaking through my skin.
Y'all, I hear it!
Shout out to the label we work with, Honeysuckle Records. They do our physical releases, so follow them on Instagram.
We did a compilation. There's a couple songs on there. But yeah, it's really good comp. A lot of cool stuff. I love, like, every band that's on that label. It's all super cool stuff. This summer, we're doing a physical release with them, HSR 69. It's going to be the Cowboy Church and the Eyewitnessed Untold Horrors on a CD, a double pressing. We got that coming up. Hopefully more of those mini CDs, if anybody saw those. We're going to do a big run of those mini CDs for Three Sundays. Oh yeah, you can follow us at Tiger Bike Band on Instagram. We don't have a Twitter or a Facebook. We have an automated YouTube, but I'm not in control of it. But our songs are there if you want to find them.
And Tiger Bike on all streaming.
Yeah, Tiger platforms. Bike on Bandcamp and all the other ones.
Deezer, Napster.
Oh, we are on Deezer, Pandora. Finally. It takes like 4 months to get on Deezer, but once you're on there, you're like locked in.
If you enjoyed this episode of Soundwaves, please take 60 seconds to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
This episode was produced and edited by me, Mary Culbertson, and promoted by the Slug Magazine editorial staff. Special thanks to editorial assistant Emma Anderson in coordination with this week's episode. Be sure to check out this month's issue of Slug. You can find a copy any place cool or at slugmag.com. KRCL was founded in 1979 to bring a more diverse voice to Salt Lake City and surrounding areas. KRCL is community funded and supported, which allows diverse commercial free programming that varies from indie to hip hop, blues to bluegrass, metal, punk, indigenous, and bilingual programs. Every weekday at 6 p.m., KRCL's Radioactive brings you grassroots activism and civic engagement with punk rock farming and live local music on Fridays. Tune in to KRCL at 90.9 FM, stream at krcl.org, or download the app on the App Store.
Did you enjoy this episode of Slug Soundwaves? You and the local community can continue to enjoy Slug Mag's content for free, but please consider making a one-time or ongoing contribution. Each contribution, no matter the amount, helps support Slug's creation of thoughtful media coverage on SLC's music, arts, events, and community subcultures. Head over to slugmag.com/donate to make your contribution today.